This is Jeff Blankford. In the dog and pony show, that was last week's Democratic convention, that's phony, not pony, there were a couple of important supporters of Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton who didn't appear on the stage nor have their names mentioned. One was Robert Kagan, co-founder of the Project of New American Century, the core neocon group that was the most prominent sponsor of the 2003 invasion of Iraq, and whom you've heard me mention a number of times on this program. The second was Israeli-American multi-billionaire media mogul Haim Saban, the largest donor to Clinton's war chest, who has already provided in the neighborhood of $10 million to her campaign, and who said back in 2008 he would spend whatever would be necessary to get her elected. Saban says he finds her combination of being liberal on domestic issues and hawkish on foreign affairs appealing. Hillary, in return, has declared herself to be one of Haim's Power Rangers, a reference to the teenagers with superhuman capabilities whose efforts on kids' Saturday morning TV made Saban his first millions. On his part, Robert Kagan has made no secret of his feelings for Clinton, since she picked him as an advisor to her State Department and chose his wife, Victoria Nuland, who had served as a top aide to Vice President Dick Cheney, to be the State Department's chief spokesperson. In September of 2013, 8 months after Clinton left the State Department, President Obama appointed Nuland Assistant Secretary of State for European and Eurasian Affairs. From that position, which she helped orchestrate the provocative, quote, regime change in Ukraine in 2014 and select its new prime minister. Later that year, Kagan told the New York Times that he hoped that his neocon views, which he had begun to call, quote, liberal interventionist, would prevail should Clinton reach the White House. There was already speculation that Nuland would become Clinton's Secretary of State. The New York Times noted that Clinton, quote, remains the vessel into which many interventionists are pouring their hopes, end quote, and quoted Kagan as saying, quote, I feel comfortable with her on foreign policy. If she pursues a policy, which we think she will pursue, it's something that might have been called neocon. But clearly her supporters are not going to call it that. They're going to call it something else. End quote, Robert Kagan. What will be on Clinton's foreign policy agenda did not get much attention during last week's convention, though what we did hear was, in a word, frightening. At 20 minutes past the hour, I'll be discussing that agenda with James W. Carden, a contributing writer for The Nation who previously served as an advisor on Russia to the Special Representative for Global Intergovernmental Affairs at the State Department. A moment ago, I used the word frightening, and not only to describe the speech on the last day of the convention by retired Marine General John Allen, but also the response of the attendees supporting Clinton, some of whom may have been paid to be there, who kept hollering, USA, USA, to drown out the supporters of Bernie Sanders, who were shouting, no more war, no more war, as Allen was speaking, or more accurately, frothing at the mouth. On top of that, the Democratic National Committee, the very same that had done whatever it could to sidetrack the Sanders campaign throughout the primary season, passed out posters emblazoned with a red, white, and blue USA in capital letters to wave while they were screaming it out during General Allen's short presentation. It would have brought smiles to the face of Richard Nixon or Ronald Reagan, as I suspect, with the words that General Allen, Clinton's choice, shouted into the microphone. For those of you who had better things to do at the time when he was speaking, and for those who might have heard it and watched it, it bears listening to again, because what he represents needs to be etched into our consciousness as we prepare for what follows the November election. So here it is, with just a couple of minutes tuned out.
Americans, I stand with you tonight, a retired four-star general of the United States Marine Corps. And I am joined by my fellow generals and admirals and with these magnificent young veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan. They are here before you because this most consequential election is the greatest one in our memory for the President of the United States. The stakes are enormous. We must not, and we could not, stand on the sidelines.
USA!
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 USA! USA!
my fellow Americans from the battlefield to the capitals of our allies and friends and partners, the free people of the world look to America as the last best hope for peace and liberty for all humankind. For we are the greatest country on this planet. So we stand before you tonight to endorse Hillary Clinton for the President of the United States of America. We trust in her judgment. We trust in her judgment. We believe in her vision for a united America. We believe in her vision of an America as a just and strong leader against the forces of hatred, the forces of chaos and darkness. We know that she, as no other, knows how to use all instruments of American power, not just the military, to keep us all safe and free. My fellow Americans, I tell you, without hesitation or reservation, that Hillary Clinton will be exactly the kind of commander-in-chief America needs. I know this because I served with her. I know this as the former special presidential envoy to the global coalition to counter ISIS. With her as our commander-in-chief, America will continue to lead this volatile world. We will oppose and resist tyranny, and we will defeat evil. America will defeat ISIS and protect the homeland. America will honor our treaty obligations. We will lead and strengthen NATO and the Atlantic Alliance and our allies in East Asia and around the world, whom we have sworn a solemn oath to defend. My fellow Americans, we will stop the spread of nuclear weapons and keep them from the hands of dangerous states and groups. Our armed forces will be stronger. They will have the finest weapons, the greatest equipment. They will have the support of the American people. You and the American military will continue to be the shining example of America at our very best. Our veterans will be thanked by a grateful nation, and they will be cared for in the manner they deserve for the sacrifices they have made for all of us, for this great country, and for world peace. With Hillary Clinton as our commander-in-chief, the United States will continue to be that indispensable, transformational power in the world. To our allies and to our friends and partners, listen closely. We are with you. America will not abandon you. To those acting against peace, acting against civilization and the world order, we will oppose you. And to our enemies, we will pursue you as only America can. You will fear us. And to ISIS and others, we will defeat you.
General, retired Marine General John Allen, the man that Hillary Clinton chose to burnish her warrior credentials. It was all too much for Canadian-American actress Margot Kidder, Still in a rage, on the very next day, on the Counterpunch website, Kidder wrote, quote, "The anti-Americanism in me is about to explode and land God knows where as my rage is well beyond reason. And I, by heritage, half American in a way that makes me more, quote, American than almost anyone else in this country, except for the true Americans, the American Indians, am in utter denial tonight that I am, as you are, American as well. I am half Canadian," she wrote. "I was brought up there with very different values than you Americans hold, and tonight, after the endless spit-ups and boasts and rants about the greatness of American militarism and praise for American military strength and boasts about wiping out ISIS and America being the strongest country on earth, and an utterly inane story from a woman whose son died in Obama's war about how she got to cry in gratitude on Obama's shoulder, tonight I feel deeply Canadian. Every subtle lesson I was ever subliminally given about the bullies across the border and their rudeness and their lack of education and their self-given right to bomb whoever they wanted in the world for no reason other than that they wanted something that people in the other country had, and their greed came oozing to the surface of my psyche." Kidder tried to get it out of her head by taking a walk along the Yellowstone River in Montana, where she lives, but she wrote, quote, "It just couldn't touch the rage in my heart. The visions of all the dead children in Syria that Hillary Clinton helped to kill, the children bombed to bits in Afghanistan and Pakistan from Obama's drones, the grisly chaos of Libya, the utter wasteland of Iraq, the death and destruction everywhere caused by American military intervention. Ukraine, Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala, Chile, you name it. Your country has bombed it or destroyed its civilian life in some basic way. I knew in my gut," she went on, "that what I was taught as a child was true, which is that you are the enemy. You are the country to be feared. You are the country to be disgusted by. You are ignorant, and your greed and self-satisfaction and unearned pride knows no bounds. I am not an American tonight," Kidder concluded. "I reject my Puritan ancestors who landed in this country in 1648. I reject the words I voiced in my citizenship ceremony. I reject every moment of thrilling discovery I ever had in this country," end quote. Those were the words of Canadian-born actress Margot Kidder in response to the warmongering speech of General John Allen, who you just heard, on how U.S. militarism and greatness were celebrated at the Democratic National Convention. Her entire article, from which the previous lines were excerpted, can be found on counterpunch.org online. Following the release by WikiLeaks of emails from the Democratic National Committee that confirmed, as Bernie Sanders and his supporters had claimed, that the DNC was working for Clinton and against him, Committee Chair Debbie Wasserman Schultz quickly resigned. It was then reported that she would open the convention and step aside, but she'd become such an embarrassment for the Clinton forces that even that brief appearance was canceled, and yesterday two more high-level staff from the DNC were forced to step down. But lest anyone think that Mrs. Clinton and her advisors were about to change their ways when it came to dealing with Sanders supporters, the announcement that Clinton had made Wasserman Schultz the honorary chair of her campaign immediately dispelled that. There were numerous reports on Real News Network, Democracy Now!, and social media of how Sanders delegates and backers were abused by the DNC thugs who stripped away posters for Sanders and for Palestinian rights against the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, which Clinton is expected to once again endorse, and signs opposing war. There were also Sanders supporters who had paid their way to Philadelphia and had tickets for the convention but were not allowed in. It was not much different in effect from a Trump campaign rally, although there were no reports that I'm aware of that anyone was punched. For me, the most telling story in this regard was the refusal of the DNC to allow former Ohio State Senator Nina Turner, who had nominated Barack Obama in 2008, to do the same for Sanders when it came time to announce the Ohio delegate vote. Because she had been speaking at a protest outside of the convention area, Turner, an African-American woman who first endorsed Clinton before becoming one of Sanders' most important speaking surrogates, was not allowed back in, despite having the proper credentials. Sanders protesters stormed the media tents to express their outrage that Turner had been denied a spot on the debate stage. That Sanders himself did not stand up to the DNC's overseers and demand that Nina Turner be permitted to rejoin the Ohio delegation and speak was not, to put it in the most delicate terms, his finest hour. According to a detailed article in Politico, after difficult negotiations, Sanders had made his deal with Clinton and her team. In exchange for a primetime speaking slot, Sanders agreed to endorse his opponent and that he and his campaign staff would make a sincere effort to mollify his supporters, which didn't go down well, particularly with the California, Oregon, and Colorado delegations that walked out. On Tuesday, the Clinton campaign needed to make sure protesters wouldn't disrupt the historic roll call that would officially make Clinton the first woman to be nominated to the top of a major party's ticket. According to Politico, the campaign blasted out an email to its delegates urging them to take the train to the Wells Fargo Center and pack the arena by 2 p.m. Meanwhile, as the story unfolded, Robbie Mook and Charlie Baker from Clinton's team sat down with Jeff Weaver and other Sanders operatives. They were eager to find a way for Sanders to play peacemaker, and Sanders seemed willing. He agreed to offer an acclamation speech, taking the mic during roll call, to ask that the rules be suspended and that Clinton be named nominee. But he wanted to do it on the main stage. Clinton's campaign said no. He had been given his due on Monday, and Tuesday was meant to mark a pivot to Clinton and her record. Sanders didn't push it, according to the Politico article. Indeed, Clinton's aides said he, quote, did everything we asked of him. Sanders' fear of a Trump presidency, I believe, was truly genuine. Trump is the predictable end product of 2 decades of Fox News and countless right-wing AM talk radio shows, a foul pile of excrement. But whether he is a greater danger to the country and to the planet than Clinton is an open question. Clinton promises enduring war, perhaps even a nuclear showdown with Russia, and interventions everywhere, while at home offering the public another term of Obama and safe Supreme Court nominees. Trump, on the other hand, will try to do business with America's declared enemies rather than bombing them, while provoking unprecedented as well as unpredictable racial conflict here at home. Never have the Democrats and Republicans offered the American people such horrible choices. If nothing changes between now and November, expect the Libertarian candidate Gary Johnson and the Green Party's choice Jill Stein to attract record vote. This has been Jeff Blankfort. Thank you for listening.